Pantakoti Vaishnavrindagijai Namacharya Shilaveda Sapurgijai Rinse Koho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrindagijai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopagavara Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturam Kijai, Navadipdam Kijai, Nagarasami Kijai, Shimari Lassi Devi Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari. All glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Probably don't have to have it this loud. A little lower. So, Prabhupada, that's amazing, you're here. So, Om Ganati Vidandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Urmilitam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So, if some of you don't know, my name is Birkrishna Goswami. And I am the GVC here, that means I'm the boss of all of you. And you better all listen to what I say or this is going to happen to you. GVC is Krishna's mafia. That's all right? Anyway, so we're going to have an interesting seminar. I already gave the seminar in Croatia, and the devotees liked it. Some of them have passed away already. In any case, the name of the seminar, as you see here, is Stop Killing the Devotees. Now, in Croatia, they were thinking that I was referring to a current political situation. Because every once in a while, in certain countries which remain nameless, you have revolutions. Being Hare Krishna revolutions, isn't it? So I wasn't referring to that, and I'm not referring to the state of the world today. Many devotees there are paranoid that the big business interests are exploiting them, the economy is going down. That may be. And they're paranoid the atomic bombs are going to fall, or they're paranoid that someone's listening in on their phone calls. You heard about this before?
Yeah.
You've been reading the news? The NSA? So people are getting very paranoid. The world's coming to an end. Just like we had the Y2K. Anyone remember the Y2K?
Yeah.
The world was supposed to come to an end in the year 2000. Never did. Some of the devotees actually spent money and bought farms in case the world came to an end. So they would grow vegetables. Unfortunately, they never planted the vegetables beforehand. So they just thought the land itself would save them, and it didn't work like that. But in any case, we're talking about something far more dangerous than the atomic bomb. Far more dangerous than the CIA. Far more dangerous than the KGB. Far more dangerous than earthquakes. Far more dangerous than practically anything. A little bug. That's all right. He wants to hear class or take shelter. It's actually one of my sincere disciples who listens to what I say. So, actually, humor is part of the seminar, because that if you laugh a lot, you won't be sick. Anyway, so we're referring to something. The most dangerous thing in the world, practically speaking, is our lifestyle. And you may say that we're Hare Krishna devotees, so we have a healthy lifestyle. We eat a lot of pakoras, a lot of kheer, we take a lot of sugar, we sit down all day long, we love our salt and the food. In fact, We take salt sabji sometimes and maybe add a little vegetables to it. We are in anxiety most of the time. We don't get enough sleep, except during Bhagavatam class. Right? That's our time. Yeah, Bhagavatam class. So we have a very healthy lifestyle. So then why do we see so many devotees succumbing to diseases if we have a very healthy lifestyle? That's the question. I mean, in my personal experience, and I'm not talking about my own health right now, which I'll talk about a little later. In my own personal experience, I've had to deal with practically one cancer case or two every week. That's a lot, isn't it? I was just in Slovenia, and there were two devotees who had cancer there. One had to have his throat open, took out his vocal cords, and he can't speak anymore. Another of my disciples had to have her whole lymph glands taken out on this side, just while I was there. And then this morning I got notice from another disciple in the United States who has terminal breast cancer. I dealt with another devotee about 3 months ago, being their hospice person, helping them leave their body. So I'm seeing this all over the place. Every time I talk to devotees, they have some chronic illness. A chronic illness is an illness that continues. We're not talking about a cold. We're talking about things like allergies and other chronic diseases. So these diseases are killing our devotees. Of course, you may say, here's an argument some devotees have. If it's time to go, if it's time to die, we're going to die. It's just our karma. Okay. Now, philosophically, that may be a good argument. But try to understand these bodies are what? Anyone know what these bodies are?
Temple of the Lord.
Huh?
Temple of the Lord.
Sent from the Lord, that's very good.
Temple
to the Lord. But what does Krishna say in the Gita? He says, use the word yantra. They're machines. And machines function a certain way. What happens if you have a car and you don't put your petrol in? It stops. What happens if you have a car and you don't put the oil in it? You destroy the engine. But you know, that's a devotee philosophy. I've been at so many temples and the gas gauge or the petrol gauge is always on empty, isn't it? In every devotee car?
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing. It's just like an ISKCON standard. It's one of our GBC rules. That never put petrol in the car. Never change your oil. Krishna will take care of it. And if the car gets damaged, that's just Krishna's desire. It's his mercy, Prabhu. Krishna wants us to get a new car. Right? Like one time, devotees were driving a car in the middle of the night when they shouldn't have been driving a car because Prabhupada said that devotees shouldn't drive more than an hour past their normal bedtime. And so they got in an accident and they died. And other devotees went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, excuse me, that was Krishna's mercy. But Prabhupada said that was their foolishness. So we don't simply live on the spiritual platform. It would be nice if we just lived on the spiritual platform. We were like Rupa and Sanatan Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami. They could eat one pat of butter every 2 days, 3 days. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? And then we wouldn't have to worry about anything else. Krishna would supply, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he's the fire of digestion. That's what Prabhupada also said. That Krishna would supply all the nutrition we needed from one pat of butter. But we're not on the platform of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. So therefore we have to be aware of the gross bodily needs. We have to be aware of the subtle bodily needs. And we have to be aware of the, what other needs? Spiritual needs. You know, we're very holistic. So definitely we want to stop killing the devotees. So therefore, we start talking about lifestyle diseases. And this is interesting, lifestyle diseases, because most people think, this is a big mistake most people make. a big excuse that most people make. They say that I'm sick. I got heart disease because of my genes. If they can't blame karma, they'll blame genes. You know, they don't want to take personal responsibility. Oh, it's my genes, Prabhu. Or it's my karma, Prabhu. Or it's because you don't love me enough, Prabhu. Or it's because the temple president was mean to me, Prabhu. I mean, you got all these excuses. And we want to throw out these excuses. Like we talked about in one other seminar I had, empathic communication, we always have these excuses. It's called denial of responsibility. You heard about this before?
Yes.
Talk about the four D's of this communication. Okay, we're not going to go over that again. So we're denying responsibility. So the scientists, okay, let's talk about what scientists are. I am not a scientist, although I have a scientific background. But the scientists have paradigm. Oh, that's a fancy word. I'm sorry. I'll tone myself down. She said I got to be careful not to use any fancy words. Okay. These scientists, all right, the scientists have a scientific method. What is the scientific method? Now, I don't accept atheistic scientism. Does anyone know what atheistic scientism is? That means we are simply matter. There's no soul. The consciousness is, see if you know this word, an epiphenomena of matter. A consciousness comes from matter. That's the scientism. But there's something called the scientific method. And the scientific method means you have big studies. And unfortunately, most of the time they do studies with rats and think that rats are like human beings. They are. They're very similar, and I know many human beings that are like rats, too. So, or monkeys, or dogs, or hogs, or camels, or asses. But that's Bhagavatam. So, they do many studies, and sometimes they do studies with human beings that they go to a particular country where everybody has pretty much the same genes, and they examine different lifestyles. Let's say you and I are twins. We're not, obviously. And I'm a Hare Krishna, and you are a butcher. I'm not saying you are. But, and they exact, and you just like to eat your steak and potatoes and everything like that, and I'm chanting and dancing, eating my quinoa and buckwheat every day. And so, genetically, we're pretty much the same. Let's take it, we're brothers, or like the studies they did in China amongst the Chinese, what's called the Han Chinese people, the same genetic people. And so you examine people with similar genes that have different lifestyles. Lifestyle, let me describe what lifestyle is. Lifestyle means not only what you eat. I'm not going to put you all on a diet, although I'd like to. I'm even, Dear Prashanta gave me a tape measure to measure everyone's waist during the seminar, but I'm not going to do that. And also he brought along a scale and a blood pressure meter. Where's Dear Prashanta? He ran away. So you examine these different, all right, let's say lifestyle. Lifestyle means things, what you eat, how you think. It's basically a holistic thing, what your goals in life are, whether you have goals, whether you don't have goals in life, whether you exercise, whether you get sunshine, who your friends, whether you have sanitary, you know, clean water to drink, or you're living in a society, whether you sleep enough or don't sleep very much. So these are different lifestyle things. So the scientists have analyzed using the scientific method, which we don't disagree with. When you have big studies, let's say 50,000 people, 100,000 people, we don't disagree with that sort of methodology for empirical things. Empirical, you understand? Empirical means things you can see, touch, measure, smell, taste. That's what the word empirical is. The scientists are good with that. They're not good at anything metaphysical. Metaphysical means beyond what you can smell or taste or touch. And they're not good at anything spiritual. But within a certain realm, science studies like this are valid. So, science has determined that 80%, here's your 80% right here, 80% of chronic diseases, and we're going to ask you all to list chronic diseases, we're going to write them down, we'll have someone else. Who's a good scribe here? You pretty good at writing? No. Anybody good at writing here? Tomasaki. Tomasaki, PhD. Soon to be PhD. So we're going to ask you to list different lifestyle diseases that are caused, chronic diseases, that are caused mostly by choices that we make in life. Does anybody have an idea of one of them? Depression. What else?
Heart disease.
Heart disease. What's right, heart disease? What's that?
Cancer.
Okay, and we'll have another one. Diabetes. These are the big ones.
Asthma.
Asthma. Migraines, headaches.
Heart disease.
What's that?
Heart disease.
Heart disease. I think we already got that.
Allergies.
I have a list here I wanted to refer to. Anyone else before I start with my list? What?
Skin disease.
Skin disease, okay. You're going to need a lot more space than that. Gallbladder disease. Liver disease. Anyone else?
Spondylosis.
Who?
Spondylosis.
Spondylosis. You know how to write that? Spondylosis. He'll tell you he has it. He'll tell you how to spell it.
Spondylosis.
AIDS. AIDS.
Heart attacks.
Heart, we already did. What'd you say? What did you say? That's our arteriosclerosis, yeah.
Alzheimer's.
Mental
disease. Depression. Let's just stick with depression. See another one. Another one would be arthritis. Arthritis, rheumatism.
Ulcers.
Ulcers. Liver disease. Are we liver disease? Kidney disease. TB? No, that's not a chronic disease. That can be
Mental disease.
Well, just put mental then. Enough people have written down that I said mental disease. Okay. Strokes? Yeah. Strokes. So, you know the interesting thing about all these diseases? I'm sure I can find someone in this room who has any one of these diseases, or several people who have any one of these diseases. But the interesting thing is that up until about 100 years ago, these weren't so prominent. These became prominent about the year 1915, 1920. When people's lifestyles changed. Interesting, isn't it? So, okay. So in order to understand, and we're going to be going into specific detail in the following days, but today is just an introduction. But in order to understand what are the lifestyle things that we need to change in order to have healthy life, we need to examine something called the blue zones. Now that may come as an interesting term or an unusual term for you, but blue zone in science refers to those areas of the world where they have the most centenarians. What's a centenarian? People who live over 100 years. And not only live over 100 years, not in a basket with tubes attached to you, but who live a healthy life over 100 years. Now before I talk about that, I want to address the concern that some of you have that I'm in Maya for talking about the body. Because you came to this camp and you were thinking, Vrindavan. Radha, Radhi, Radhi. You know, I remember first time I came to Serbia, I was kept up all night long. I was staying at someone's house, I won't mention who. But they were chanting, Radhi, 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 Shalom. All night, and I was just thinking, just be quiet so I can go to sleep. Because I'm not on that platform. I have to be honest. You know, for me, maybe I'm chanting prasadam, 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 or computer, 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 or iPhone, iPhone, iPhone. You know, I'm on a different platform than these advanced devotees here. So some of you may be thinking, I'm in Maya, I shouldn't be thinking about these things, devotees shouldn't be thinking about these things. I'll tell you a story about Prabhupada. Prabhupada came to the Western world, of course, and he had 2 heart attacks in the boat on the way over. And Prabhupada was assured by Krishna. He had a dream in which the various incarnations of Krishna were rowing the boat. You know, Lord Varaha, Korma, Lord Nrsingadeva. Can you imagine that? That's an amazing dream. And they were assuring Prabhupada that everything would go well. And Prabhupada arrived in New York, went to Butler, Pennsylvania, and after some time, when he started to get some followers, he was in New York City, Manhattan. And Prabhupada, one Sunday, had a minor heart attack. And the devotees were running around looking for a doctor, naturally. And on Sunday, I guess doctors don't work. When I was young, doctors used to come to your home. Nowadays, you go to a hospital to try to find a doctor and they spend 5 hours getting you to fill out forms and you're dead before you fill out all your forms. It's an emergency, I can't breathe. That's all right. Do you have insurance? So, anyway. That's when I was young. I remember the doctor. Anyone remember this? A doctor with a little black bag coming to your house and measuring your heart.
Long ago.
This is before any of you were born. This is the past 1800s. So they were looking for a doctor in New York. In New York, they're more sophisticated, and doctors don't work on Sundays. So they finally found this very old Jewish doctor there. He was old. He was about 95 years old. And he walked in and he liked this to see Prabhupada. And he took his little stethoscope. That means the thing he used to measure the heartbeat. And he put it to Prabhupada's heart. And he said, Swamiji, you have a heart problem. And the devotee said, we knew that. That's why we asked you to come here. It's like, you know, you're driving your car, you have a flat tire, and someone comes and I'm diagnosing you have a flat tire. But then he said something very interesting. He said, do you exercise? And Prabhupada said, no. And he said, Swamiji, you should do, and I'm paraphrasing his words, you should do aerobic exercise every day. Aerobic means when you get your heart going. Because previously to that, Prabhupada was not taking his morning walks. I mean, Prabhupada's morning walks are very famous. You can listen to so many tapes where Prabhupada is talking to the scientists, particularly Swarup Damodar, who wasn't Swarup Damodar Goswami then. He was a brahmachari attending the university and getting his PhD. And Prabhupada would always say, where's the scientist? Where's the scientist? I mean, I went on many walks with Prabhupada. Usually I spent my time eating the dust from his feet. I would run behind Prabhupada and on the beach, and I'd take the sand. I guess that's dust, right? I take the sand and throw it in my mouth. And then other times after Prabhupada would take prasadam, I would steal the whole maha plate. And I wouldn't share it with the devotees. I'd just eat the grape rinds, the orange peels, and I would have eaten the plate itself had it not been of metal. But so anyway, I mean, Prabhupada said these are very powerful substances, right? The foot bathing water, the foot dust, and the prasadam remnants. So I was very determined like that. So anyway, so on these morning walks with Prabhupada, which Prabhupada started after he got the doctor's advice, it was so aerobic that we could not keep up with Prabhupada. Prabhupada took the doctor's advice. He didn't say, he's just a carmi Jewish doctor. Not even the same religion, you know. Really don't know. Lecha! He was honest, I'm not going to take advice from a lecha. So you take advice from a devotee who doesn't know anything about health, and you die. Right? So one should be ready to take nectar from a filthy place. Not to say this person was filthy, but that's the statement. Or like a swan is able to take nectar, separate the nectar in the lake like that. So Prabhupada took that very seriously, and from that day forward, every morning Prabhupada took an aerobic walk. Even if he was in Switzerland, where it was too cold to walk, he would walk in the hotel back and forth. Actually, Prabhupada called Mount St. Helens in Switzerland, he called it Mount St. Hellish, because it was so cold. The devotees took him there and said, it's very healthy. And Prabhupada said, this is hell. Because naturally, as Europeans, we think that snow is something very nice, right? But Prabhupada considers snow hellish. It's just frozen water. That's all it is. So, anyway, so taking a hint from what Prabhupada did when he got good advice, you know, I started to research this whole subject matter myself out of, I wouldn't say compassion, because I don't have any compassion, but out of concern, that's better. If I was compassionate, I would see Krishna by now. But out of concern for the devotees that I've had to deal with, seeing people in Mayapur dying, you know, my friends, my disciples even, dying, and just, as I said, serving as a hospice person for people, and just helping them go back to Godhead, yes. I mean, that part is nice. It's nice to help someone go back to Godhead, but it's not nice to accelerate the process. You understand the difference? But the last person I was serving as hospice for, it's a very nectarian engagement to help someone leave their body. And if you find a devotee who's sick, you should actually gravitate towards that person to help that person if they're getting ready to leave their body. They thanked me, the family thanked me for helping this lady leave her body in a Krishna conscious way, and I turned around and I said, thank you for letting me do this. Because service to the Vaishnavas is more important than service to the deities. If you're serving the deities and a Vaishnava needs something, neglect your deity service. Don't be a Kanishta Adhikari, a third class devotee. So that's very important. So what I'm doing is out of service to the devotees. Of course, I'd much rather be at Govardhan. I like to be at Govardhan. I just chant. The other day, we were not at Govardhan. The other day I was at Sarajevo, which is a poor excuse for Govardhan. And we took a japa walk through the city. And some of the devotees here were with us. Shamasaki was here. Dhruva Prashanta was with us. And I was just imagining I was a Doberdown. Of course, I had to keep my eyes closed so I didn't see where I actually was. So I'd much rather be a Doberdown, but I'm impelled by a sense of care and concern to help the devotees, as I've helped myself with my health. Because I have personal experience, not only with other devotees, myself, 8 or 10 years ago, my body was a disaster. It still is, but anyway. Bodies are always disasters. Tridatake, bile mucus air, we understand that. Just a bag of stool. I mean, we all remember the early days of the movement when you preached so heavy the Sunday feast. You told all the poor guests who came in for a little spiritual enlightenment that they were just stool bags. You remember that? I mean, that new devotee preaching is exactly like that. And, you know, don't hold the hand of your girlfriend. Why not just hold a bag of stool instead? Is anyone here preaching like that? Or beauty is just skin deep. That's another one. And why don't you just take the skin of your girlfriend or boyfriend and walk around with it? If you peel away the skin, will you still love it? I mean, all these different types of preaching are there. That's called neophyte preaching. So, getting back to the point. So we want to help the devotees have good health so that they can concentrate on their bhakti. Because without good health, for someone who is not an absolutely pure devotee, you can't concentrate on your Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said if someone is hungry, they can't be Krishna conscious. I mean, a neophyte, that is, which is everybody. So we want people to have sufficient food, sufficient needs. And Dr. Vinod Thakur in his Chaitanya Shikshamrita talks about different material and spiritual needs which all have to be fulfilled. We're holistic, body, mind, and soul. Okay. So in order to do this, I was talking about my own health. I did a lot of research to try to help myself because basically my health was really bad. I was having all sorts of allergic reactions, swelling in my body in different places, allergies, arthritis, rheumatism. And this was about 10 years ago when I was 92. Nobody caught that joke. Anyway, 10 years ago when I was 54. And I was a wreck. So I decided to find out through reading different research papers, consulting with different doctors. I have one disciple who's a famous anti-cancer doctor in Europe. Some of you know him. He's a devotee. Radha Raja. He's the number one prostate cancer person, specialist in the philosophy of how to overcome prostate cancer in Germany right now. So we corresponded, I visited him, we had a lot of interactions, a lot of research, through bona fide medical journals. We're not talking about just go Googling something. You know, you Google something, you find out about a lot of witchcraft and other things on the internet. But, you know, bona fide stuff, and then I was able to make the necessary changes so that I can say that my health is better now than it was 10 years ago, better now than it was 30 years ago. Better now than it was 40 years ago. And that's pretty good. I know I'm not going to live forever. I mean, I could croak today. You'll croak. Sorry about that, expert. You know what it means. Kick the bucket, croak. Whatever. I mean, that could happen today. You know, there's nothing guaranteed in this world. You know, there's so many stories of people who follow a healthy lifestyle, then they get run over by a car. So what's the use of all their fasting and everything like that if the car is going to run over? There's many stories out there. So in any case, so part of that research that I did involved something called blue zones. Now, a blue zone in scientific terminology is a place where you get the most centenarians, which I mentioned before, and the most people who live a very long life. So let's talk about a few of those blue zones. And one of them is not India. One is in a place called Okinawa, Japan. Okinawa, Japan is like an island off the coast of Japan. And Okinawa, Japan was isolated in terms of how people lived and what people ate for a long period of time. People ate mostly vegetarian, practically nothing else, no milk products, and they would be working outside and getting a lot of sunshine. And the average age for men and women was about 85 or 86. Imagine. And they lived very healthy. There was practically no incidence, very small, practically non-existent incidence of heart disease, diabetes, or practically any of the other lifestyle diseases that we mentioned before. So that's one blue zone. Another place was, interestingly enough, Loma Linda, California. Now you may say, California. I mean, that's one of the most sinful places in the world. They say if you take the whole United States and turn it on its end, or everything that's loose will fall down to California. And anything that falls out of California will go to Hawaii. I mean, we have so many jokes in the United States about California. So, but in this particular place, there's one sect, religious sect, called Seventh-day Adventists. And these Seventh-day Adventists, they, most of them follow a complete vegan diet, healthy diet, like that. And so they have very, very long lifespan. And one of the studies I read, people live into the 90s and they're still driving cars. Of course, I wouldn't get in the car with that particular individual, you know, a lady driving a car at 99. I definitely wear a helmet or something like that. So these are some of the areas. So what are they doing there? What is their lifestyle? And there was another important book written called The China Study, which some of you may have read, which is based on studying hundreds of thousands of Chinese people who lived in different areas of the country who were genetically the same. So they arrived at many different conclusions. This is why I already did. You know, why am I doing this? And three aspects. So many different conclusions about health. Life, the body, mind, and soul. And it was very holistic. And each one of these places, let's talk about the body, mind, and soul. They worked hard, they had a lot of exercise outside, a lot of sunshine. They had satisfying lives with their families. As a sannyasi, it's hard for me to talk about things like this. You know, because Prabhupada said, society, friendship, and love, divinely bestowed upon man by God, right? Everyone heard about that before? But we all need society, friendship, and love. No. I'm not preaching against sannyas dharma. But we need friends, like Prabhupada talked about, Rupa Goswami talks about, loving exchanges between devotees, right? Dadati pratigranati guyam akyati brichati bhumte bhujyate chaba. Prabhupada said, our movement expands due to these loving exchanges, right? So everybody needs friends. And as we've seen, let's take the cases of some sannyasis who have not done so well in Krishna consciousness. Invariably, that means without exception, they didn't have close friends or loving relationships with their god brothers or with anybody. They became isolated. Isolated means they were in an ivory tower, because that's a professor, an ivory tower. They were living a life behind closed doors and they couldn't open their hearts or minds or admit anything. So therefore, Prabhupada said, if someone doesn't reveal their mind and confidence, they fall down. So you have to have friends. So this is a very important part of the mental aspects of staying healthy. That is a very important part. So invariably, in all these blue zones, they had very close relationship. Not only husband and wife, but they had extended families, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, children. And it was a very warm family environment. Now, of course, what does that say about us? We need that too. In our Krishna consciousness movement, all the devotees need those sorts of environments, accepting. And if someone makes a mistake, be ready to forgive them. And if we make a mistake, be ready to admit it. You're not perfect. The problem is sometimes because we have the perfect philosophy, we think we're perfect and we're afraid just to be humans. I remember when I took sannyas, I thought I couldn't be a human being anymore. It was like that, you know, no feelings. Don't cry. It's almost like in the Ramayana story, when Lakshman went with Lord Ram to the forest, his wife was crying, and Lakshman said to his wife, what? Don't cry. For 14 years, I don't want you to cry one drop. So this poor lady, her name was Irmala. Not the Irmala, not Ruma, that you all know. She would be too old. But, so for 14 years, she couldn't cry. The poor lady. Can you imagine if I told any of you ladies, you can't cry for 2 days? Impossible. You know, it's just like, you want it impossible. But so, anyway, so a part of that mental health, too, was very interesting. It was having a goal in life, which we're going to talk about. That's what we'll finish up this morning's discussion with, having a goal in life, which is perhaps the most important thing. And that point was brought out to me when I was reading a book written by this person named Viktor Frankl. Anyone's heard of Viktor Frankl before? So he was a survivor of the concentration camp. He was a psychiatrist. So he spent several years, specifically this book is Man's Search for Meaning. You read that book? Very interesting, isn't it? He spent several years in a concentration camp where, obviously, he was being tortured, all the other prisoners were being tortured. He lost his father and other family members, or even didn't know where they were in the concentration camp. And he watched many people die, not just from going to the gas chambers, but just from giving up. The majority of people who died in the concentration camps gave up. Now, it's understandable they gave up because they were working in the snow without shoes on, forced to march for miles and miles every day in the snow and do this hard work, and they would get maybe one little piece of bread a day with just water as soup. Now, that's understandable. So he analyzed why certain people were able to survive that ideal and come out even healthy at the end. And the analysis was, or the result of that analysis was, that these people had some overriding goal or purpose in life. Because his purpose was a little different than our purpose, maybe. His purpose was love for his wife. You know, which is, love is actually a very high purpose in the material world. And we're not talking about the lust that people experience in the name of love. It's something that's really caring for someone. And so that kept him alive throughout his tenure in the concentration camp. And everyone he observed who stayed alive had that particular, one particular goal. So in these blue zones, in these blue zones, these people had a goal in life. Of course, usually it was in terms of their family members, like their grandchildren, to take care of their grandchildren, etc. But it was some goal. So goal is very important in Krishna consciousness. Many of us, and I would say this is the primary reason why not only we have bad health, some of us have bad health, But we can't hear our japa in the morning. We don't have good sadhana because we're not really focused on what's called in Sanskrit a sankalpa, which basically means an intention. I've spoken about this the last few days, that in the Vedic system, when you do something, you always recite in Sanskrit a sankalpa, which means we're here today. I'm sure Atman, he's done some marriage ceremonies. You say we're here today on the fifth day of the moon, the sixth day of this, or this, or that. You know, I'm not expert in these things. And we're getting so-and-so, Devi married with Das, or in the future, Dasi married with Dasi, whatever. You know, we're a liberal movement here, so. So that's called a sankalpa, your intention. So we really don't think about what is our goal in life, why am I here? We're doing things ritualistically, we're not connected. And so therefore, we tend to fall asleep during class, we're not attentive when we're chanting our japa. We mentioned the other day about chanting our japa. We chant 64 rounds when we have time on Ekadasi. And I was telling the devotees, remember that class, that my sankalpa that day was I was praying for the citizens of Sarajevo that I could have some compassion for them. And I've seen when someone has a sankalpa, they're very determined. Not only healthy, but determined. Just coming here to the camp yesterday, I saw this practical demonstration with two boys. You know the story. So we're driving in the car, and these two boys, we're talking. It's normally little boys talk. It's like someone had put some batteries in them, you know, lithium batteries. I didn't find it bad, but their parents wanted them to be quiet. So the father said, "Here's your sankalpa." He said, "If you're quiet for 1.5 hour, you will have ice cream." And so, boop. It's like someone had put a gag over their mouths. They wouldn't even reply to anything I said or anyone said. I mean, they could have been hurt, you know, cut themselves, they wouldn't have cried, anything. Because their whole intention in life was to have some ice cream. So that's how powerful it is to have an intention. And how it really keeps you going, you know. What is your life's purpose? And sankalpas change, or your intentions change from day to day. But you have some overriding one. I mean, if you have to ask me, my overriding purpose is to serve Prabhupada and be Krishna conscious. And that's a vague thing, I'm sorry. But to be Prabhupada's eternal servant, life after life. I mean, that's really what I want. I mean, other people, they want to be a gopi or a coward boy. That's too advanced for me. Like I mentioned in my other seminar, that one lady just wrote me a letter. She said, "I realize I'm a gopi." I get these letters all the time, you know, from gopis. "I realize I'm a gopi." And I said, "Oh, that's good." I said, "What's your gopi name?" And she didn't, I won't tell you what it was. But anyway, and I said, "I realize I'm a servant of Prabhupada." Because that's something I can really relate to. Because your intention has to be something that's really relatable. Not something that's so far up there. I mean, maybe she was a gopi and I hope I'm not offending her. And I said, "I'm a servant of Prabhupada." And then she wrote me a letter back, "Well, what about your spiritual body?" And I said, "Well, I'd like to have a spiritual body that I can travel with Narada Muni sometime. Get his association, you know, from universe to universe with his, hear his veena or his accordion or whatever." So, you know, that's my intention and it keeps me going. You know, when you wake up in the morning, you should wake up ecstatic. If you're not waking up ecstatic in the morning, you're going to have bad health. If you're waking up, "Oh no, another day, 16 rounds.
Oh.
Like Prabhupada gave the example, he was chanting on his beads one time, moving the counter beads down. And he moved the 16th counter bead down. And he said, I'm finished, now I can do any damn thing. Thank God. You know, something like that. So, you know, if you're not happy about what you're doing, then that's a major problem for your health. Your mental health and your physical health. So therefore, getting back to Viktor Frankl, he evolved a particular type of psychotherapeutic technique. It was called logotherapy. I'm sure if you've read his book, you know what I'm talking about. That means if anyone had any trouble like depression, because we were looking at depression before, he would just try to drill down to get their purpose in life. And, because that has to come from the person. I can't give you your purpose in life. Something that excites them. And then he was able to pretty much cure people's diseases, psychological diseases, by doing that. If any are interested in his works, I highly recommend his books to you, especially this one book, Man's Search for Meaning. You can learn a lot about psychology. Okay? So that's the mind. And of course, the body we're going to talk about in the next few days, about the adjustments we have to make in the body. If I wrote anything else down. Okay. Adjustments we have to make in the body in order to be... Oh, no, I didn't write anything else down. So what I want to do right now to end this morning's session, tomorrow's session will start with a little video, a little funny video that's entitled, the beginning of the video is entitled, Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. Some of you may have seen this video before, just the beginning. And if anyone is interested in seeing the whole video, then perhaps later on in the camp we can arrange for it, but not during my seminar. So what I wanted to end up with now is each of you to think about what your purpose is, what excites you, what your goal in life is, why you're here, why you're doing Krishna consciousness, and then we'll go around the room. I'm going to give, we don't have a lot of time because we have to 1:15, but I'm going to give you about 7 or 8 minutes to think about that. You can write it down, think it in your mind, and then we'll ask you all, not all of you, but whoever wants to volunteer bold enough, what your goal or purpose in life is. Okay? So we got now 7 minutes to go. Go. Okay.